Hello, literacy leaders and champions. Welcome to Literacy Talks, the podcast series from Reading Horizons, dedicated to exploring the ideas, trends, insights, and practical issues that will help us create literacy momentum. Our series host is Stacy Hurst, professor at Southern Utah University and chief academic advisor at Reading Horizons, where reading momentum begins. Joining Stacy are Donnell Pons, a recognized expert in literacy and special education, and Lindsay Kameny, a Utah-based elementary classroom teacher. Today's episode is important because our hosts explore how we can encourage a love of reading for learners of all ages. From engaging book talks to celebrations of the aha moments as learners become readers, this episode reminds us of the why behind the work we do. Let's get started.
Welcome to another episode of Literacy Talks. I'm your host, Stacy Hurst, and I'm joined by Donnell Pons and Lindsay Kameny. And as you know, we spend a lot of time talking about literacy on this podcast, and we have been really privileged to cover a lot of topics. We take turns choosing those topics, and today we are talking about a topic that Lindsay selected. So as following protocol, I'll just turn the time over to you, Lindsay, to introduce us to the topic.
Thanks, Stacy. Okay, so our topic today also comes with a little bit of an explanation. And what I want to talk about today is how we can encourage a love of reading with our students. And my explanation is that I really want my students to love to read, but that's not my main goal in my classroom. And that's because this is something that we can't really control so much. My main goal in my classroom is to get my students to read. And I think that's the most important thing, because they're not going to love to read if they can't read. So the biggest thing we can do in our classrooms is to teach our students to read. But I also would love for them to love reading. And so I want to talk about how we can encourage that. And like I said, that's something that it's we can't really control. Not everyone's going to love reading, but we can do some things in our classroom to get kids excited about it. And when I brought this topic up before, you know, Donnell brought up the great point how a lot of her students, many of our students, can have a lot of trauma around reading. And so we also want to be talking about maybe how we can help some of our students heal from that and what we can do. So to start, though, I think the three of us, we all love to read. So I want to start by asking you guys, why do you think you love reading? Can you think of anything that maybe led to that? I will go first while you guys think, because I just threw that on you. But the first thing is, I've always been an avid reader. It came easy for me. And then I grew up with my dad, who was constantly reading. And so I feel like I had this role model where, you know, every evening, that's all he did. And he stayed up late reading. And then he took us to the library every Saturday. And I loved going to the library with him and choosing books. And he would also take us to the bookstore. And it seemed like it was always rainy days. If it was a rainy day, we would go to the bookstore. And I knew that he would always buy me a book. Because he just really encouraged that with us, with you know, me and my siblings. So what do you think? Why do you guys like reading?
Okay, I'm guessing Donnell is pausing, so I will let her go last. But I, you know what, as you were sharing that, Lindsay, I was thinking about that too. I remember reading a research study. It's been too many years to even recall where it came from, but it was early in my teaching career that said if fathers read to children and are involved in their literacy development, then somehow that has a greater impact, or a great impact, I should say, because on the surface, that sounds wrong because moms do a lot with that too. But I also saw my dad reading, and he was kind of an anomaly because he actually didn't graduate from high school, but he really loved reading. He was kind of a closet nerd. He was like a diesel mechanic and a truck driver, but he also read Star Wars books. So I'd say early on, I had a lot of great examples of reading, even though you wouldn't expect it based on my upbringing. But I also think the fact that I could read, like you said, it came kind of naturally to me. And then very shortly, I got caught up in stories and learning about people and places that I didn't know. I think it just really expanded my vision of life. And then later, learning how to apply what I was reading to things like cooking or, you know, I mean, from a very early age, I read the encyclopedia. I'm not going to lie, I did that before Google. and just learning. I think my love of learning and the fact that reading facilitated that was a big part of it.
Yeah, I love that. We all love learning, right? We're kind of obsessed with that, where I just feel like we take in as much as we can. Donnell, did you have anything to share about your love of reading?
You bet. I would say it most definitely was my mother. And my mom was a busy woman. We had a lot of siblings, and my mother worked. She was a piano teacher all through the years, and she had been a school teacher. And so her time was precious. And whenever she got a minute, she would grab a book. She always had one handy. And so if you wanted to spend time with her, then you spent time with books. And I remember being very young and unable to read. I hadn't learned to read yet. And I would crawl up on the bed while she was lying down reading. And I would snuggle up in the crook of her arm as she had her book aloft in the air. And she would turn the pages and I would pretend that I was reading with her. And that was the first really memory I have of books. I was really young. And I remember how much joy she received from books. And that was important, was seeing just how much my mother loved books. And then we had those opportunities like you did too, Lindsay. We would go to the library and we'd take a big bag and we would fill it with books and we were there for hours. My mother would take us weekly. And one of the things I do remember though about those times, there were some siblings who were lacking. And I only, when in adulthood, realized why there were some siblings that didn't take the trip to the library, while there were some siblings that didn't find themselves crawling into the crook of my mother's arm while she was reading. And it's because reading was not coming for them. And later I would find out why. You know, it was a heritable reason why learning to read was difficult. And so that's kind of interesting too. It shapes my memories of reading in my household too, that some loved it and some did not love it, and why some did not love it when it was so pervasive in our home and our mother loved it so much. And I think of Marianne Wolf, who's one of our fantastic reading researchers, and she writes so beautifully on reading. And she talks about that, those early experiences with reading that you have with your parents and, you know, the older guardian in the household to the child, and how important those are. And I'm hearing that they shaped all of our experiences in many ways.
Yeah, so interesting. We all have these positive memories around reading. And so let's try to bring that into the classroom, or, you know, with our students, if we're in a tutoring situation or whatever. How can we bring in more positive classrooms? So let's kind of move to some ideas about what we can do to encourage this love of reading. And of course, we know the main thing is to teach them to read. But what else can we do? So, one thing I was thinking about is to help them feel successful as they read. And, you know, I love that Anita Archer says success breeds motivation. And I really see that. And one way I can do that with my first graders that are just starting to read is for them to read, I can start them with decodables, exposing them to, you know, sound symbol correspondences that I've taught already, so that they can practice and they can feel that success. And I just remember this one boy one time saying, "Mrs. Kemeny, I can actually read the words." And he was so excited. And I just love that. So showing them that they can do it and showing them how they can be successful, I think, is one way. Okay, what else? What are some other ideas?
So Lindsay, I'm going to add, that's fantastic. And I love hearing about that in the classroom as the school teacher, and how fun that is to have that happen. But equally, it's those students who are going to struggle, because we know that there's a segment of the population that has been born with certain components, right? We're talking about dyslexia for one, and there may be other reasons too to struggle with reading. But making sure that opportunities are provided, that they will get the additional support they need in order to have those moments. They'll probably come later. They'll take a lot more work or effort to be able to have those moments where that student says, oh, I can read this. I can read those words. But maintaining that it's equally important to provide the support to make sure those students reach that place too. And like I say, it's not going to happen maybe in those first few months like it does for another student. But making sure that they're always present in the classroom, they're always front of mind, just like the rest of the students are in the classroom, to make sure they get to that stage rather than falling further and further behind, where the rest of the class seems to be progressing forward and coming to love and enjoy, and they're coming further and further behind and having less and less to do with reading in the classroom.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it, you know, what's interesting is that boy who said that, he does have dyslexia. And so I think he had this just such a great appreciation because it was starting to make sense to him. Aha, you know, and making sure to give him a text that he could be successful with. Stacey, did you have something?
I do, because I think every child deserves to experience that success, right? And one of the reasons I loved teaching first grade, and I've said this many times before, that's where my heart will always be. Any chance I get, I work with first graders, because you see so many of those moments. It's a very pivotal year for reading instruction. And as I look back on my own teaching, I modeled the love of reading to my students a lot. I was reading the unabridged version of Les Mis one year, and I was talking to my students about it every day. Of course, on a first grade level, we had a really healthy debate about whether Jean Valjean was right in stealing the bread or not. Really complex ideas, right? But I think there's a flip side to that, because at the same time, the students who were like me as a child and reading came naturally, luckily, my teaching was informed by science, so they were getting phonics instruction as well. However, what about the students that were feeling the same level of discouragement as the students who were feeling the same level of excitement over it because they were struggling? And I do think it's important for us to model that love of reading and the fact that we can do it. But I also remember modeling for my students reading complex text, words that I couldn't read, that were from a research study, and modeling that struggle. And maybe we need to focus on that too, that everything's not easy, but if we persist and stick with it, of course, there's a great responsibility on us as teachers, because I think of Marianne Wolfe too. Man, that woman has the heart of a poet. If you've ever heard her talk, she's so inspiring and energetic. She is fantastic, but she also has a deep understanding of the mechanisms involved in learning how to read. So marrying the two, I mean, we can, as educators, only inspire to that, right? Or aspire. But I think those things are important to not only model the joy of it, but also model the struggle and overcoming that.
So I like that. So kind of pointing out, sometimes I struggle with this, or telling them, you know, sometimes I read a page and realize, wait, I don't know what I just read, and I have to go back and read it again, right? Or pointing out that sometimes you struggle with the words as well. That's an interesting point.
You know, I love, all of this is so good. I love listening to it. And I'm also thinking of, I do a lot of repeat reading, and it doesn't matter how old the students are, and a variety of texts, but we'll read and then I'll say, let's read that again and see, I'm not sure I understood. What do we think that really meant? And go back and really linger on a sentence or two. And say, oh, I think I've kind of changed what I thought the first time. I'm thinking this now. What do you guys think? And really pondering over a text. I think that's important too. And Stacey mentioned the value of reading a text that they would not be able to read at that particular time. They don't have the skill for it. It's well above their skill level to be able to read, but being able to hear, we call that, you know, the ear reading. And they can do a lot of ear reading that's well beyond their years. And I think that also helps for students who are struggling with reading, period, is to have opportunities to just hear language, to hear somebody else reading a text and what that sounds like. And I did a lot of that with my son, who struggled to read when he was younger. He has dyslexia, and he was exposed to so many texts that were well beyond his years. He was always in three books at a time, and that was our choice and his. He was always at a text that he could read, which was obviously well beyond typically his peers, and that he was in a text that was a bit of a reach, and so he was reading with someone. And then he was in a text that he was had no skills to be able to read, that was well beyond his years and beyond his peers' years, so that he can have opportunity and exposure to hear a text at a higher level. And I think all of those things really contributed to him to this day not being afraid to tackle a text. And even though it may be difficult, he still wants to. He has a desire to tackle a different text.
That is so critical. I don't know, Lindsay, if you're having memories of learning the Goldilocks approach to choosing a book that we taught our students. I don't know if you did, but like it was so that they could identify this is too easy, this is too hard, this is just right. And even on a very general level, when they start out with a book in small group instruction or wherever it is that's they deem too hard, just pointing out when it becomes too easy for them, right? And celebrating that and really focusing on that trajectory that we all have. That was important to remember. Thanks for mentioning that, yeah. Donnell.
Well, and I love Donnell is talking about these read alouds. And that is so important that we do that in our classroom. And even for older learners, I think they would love those read alouds. And that is building a positive experience. And really, we want to build these positive experiences, as we're talking about, surrounding text. And read alouds just can bring reading alive in the classroom. And that gets all your students excited about the story and excited about books. And we can, you know, use that time to do a wide variety of great literature, nonfiction, everything, exposing our students to that is huge. And also, like, similar to you, Donnell, my son with dyslexia loved read alouds. And we, you know, in fact, we pay for Learning Ally every year, which I think you have to be diagnosed with dyslexia to get it, but it's all these human read audiobooks. And that really got him into reading because the first, you know, larger book that he read, he listened to it first. And he listened to the book and then he actually read it. And so I'll always be thankful for that. But read alouds where, you know, everything that could be like a subscription service, but also you, the teacher, reading to them is so important.
Get all the resources discussed during Literacy Talks podcast episodes and stay up to date about webinars and other special events from Reading Horizons. Go to readinghorizons.com/literacytalks and subscribe to our podcast digest so you're always in the know about everything literacy.
You know, I was thinking about this in our overcorrecting episode, and one thing that I wish we would have had time to talk about that I would hate to see go by the wayside is something I learned from my balanced literacy instruction focused on comprehension, especially when we're reading aloud, but it is teaching students to make connections with the text. And we used to call it text to text, text to self, and text to world. But I have never stopped doing that because I think there's so much power in relating that to their own egocentric lives at first, right? They're first graders. What do we expect? And then helping them just make connections between other texts or forms of media, movies they've seen. Maybe they read the book and seen the movie. But then also expanding their vision outside of themselves. And literally I hesitate using the word magic because we understand what happens in the brain when kids learn how to read. And I feel like that's magical in a sense. But it's also very magical when students start making these connections to those texts on their own. And I'll never forget the day in my classroom that we were reading Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, is that what it's called? The Magic Stone. And literally, that was our read aloud the day after Elizabeth Smart was found. And my students were making the most fantastic connections. If you haven't read the story, I won't take the time to review it. Go back and review it and think about that whole story if you're familiar with it, based on their world, right? So anyway, I think that that's something that's really important to always connect to their own lives.
Yeah, and to other texts. And a way we can do that is like if we have author studies where we read several books by the same author or by topics, it's great to pair a nonfiction text with a fiction text. So maybe in science, you're learning about frogs, and then you're going to read Frog and Toad as a fiction. And that's great to kind of compare. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's fun. Lindsay, because you're currently in that space, do your students have a favorite author?
They're obsessed with Pete the Cat. Now I'm like forgetting who the author is. I can't even tell you. I need more Pete the Cat books. And I had like five and they're all like coming apart and ripped because they go to that and they're reading it constantly over and over. And David Shannon, he's like No David. Yes. And those ones, those are their favorites right now. I seriously need to go purchase more because...
You know, speaking of being able to do the thing, right? I think that's one reason they love David Shannon, because they can read No David, right?
Yeah.
They can recognize some of those words. My students loved Robert Munch. And most of us know him for I'll Love You Forever, which I still can't read aloud without crying. So there's that. But he also has a lot of really entertaining, funny text too. And like you, Lindsay, I had the anthology and the pages were coming out. I bought so many of Robert Munch's books. But
so just to add to this conversation, one thing I'm hearing, and it's really interesting and fun to kind of listen to you guys talking about those younger ages, but there's an author that Mary Ann Wolfe had mentioned when she was in a podcast recently, and it's Marilyn Robinson, and she's one of my favorite authors. She's fantastic. And she produces a book every like 10, 13 years. She takes her time and labors over every word. It's just beautiful. One of her books is Gilead. It's a great book. I highly recommend. But she also has written some essays on different topics. And one of them is reading is part of one of the topics. And in it, she says something very interesting that I think is really important. We need to think about it for a minute, exactly what she says. And I would linger over the words if I were doing this with a class and reading it aloud and say, what do we think she's really saying with this? But in it, she talks about the very act of reading when someone picks up a text, doesn't matter what it is, but that very act of taking up the text and spending your own time with it in your own way, very personal, very subjective, that act of interacting with information in that way is something that everyone should have an opportunity to do and should have an opportunity to do as much as they would like, and then have an opportunity to say, this is what I think about it, and have it be their own opinion and be fine. So she said, today we've moved away from not only having those experiences, we may never have them. A lot of people can go through their weeks and weeks, months and months, years and years, and not have an experience. We know how often people don't pick up a book. So that's tragic. But then she said, on top of that, we've moved kind of into an era where there are experts who tell us what we should be thinking about what we're reading. And we're in an era where there's more of that than ever. And she said, I'd really love us to see us go back and revisit those important aspects of reading. And that is where what I say about what I read is really important. So hearing you two talk about how your students gravitate towards a certain text and they love it so much, they're wearing the book down, but they're also think about gaining an opinion about how they feel about that. That's so important that they can take with them into other areas.
And it brings up, because one of my centers that they're doing independently is reading, but they have the choice to read or they can do audiobooks, right? Because I don't want it to be a waste of time. But you know what? I am happy if they want to flip through Pete the Cat and they're remembering the story and maybe just calling it out and they're not actually reading the words. I'm fine with that because that's encouraging a love of reading. And I know that I am still going to be teaching them reading and they're going to get lots and lots of reading practice from me. So this is not like our main reading time. But if they want to spend time browsing the pictures, you know, leafing through the pictures of a book, great. They're getting excited about that. And you know what? Eventually they'll be able to read it.
Lindsay, I love that. Important. The choice, right? Choice. I think that's another thing we can do for our students. Give them a variety of texts, expose them to all kinds, let them choose, and then teach them what they need to know to read. Donnell, what were you going to say?
Lindsay, it reminds me of a book I read many years ago by Daniel Pennac, P-E-N-N-A-C. I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly because he's French, but he was a French teacher, and the book has sold out many, many times over in different places around the world, and it's been translated, but it's called The Rights of the Reader. And he's got these rights that you have. And one of those is to be able to pick up a book and do whatever you want with it. If I want to read the first page and that's all, I should be able to set it down. And I love you giving your students that right, the rights of the reader, to approach the text how they want to approach it. Love it.
And I used to, you know, I've kind of grown with this too, because I used to, when they were at that little center, and they're kind of close to me because my reading group is there. So I have a group of students where we're practicing reading, and the kids are at the carpet or at the couch right there in our little reading nook. And I used to be really like, oh, quiet, not talking to your neighbor, you know? And now I really loosened up because I will have two little kids and maybe one's going to read to the other, and they're giggling and they look, looking at the pictures. And it's just like, I just feel like I've grown a little bit because I've realized, you know what? They're having a positive experience with the book, and that's what I want.
Yeah, you're bringing back some happy memories for me. The student who was what in my classroom called the reader of the day, part of their assignment was to share a book that they liked. It could be anything, but we had an author's chair that they used to share their writing. I should have added the word readers because they sat on that to talk about their favorite books, but I'm just having some great memories of, and it was all manner of books, right? It was all kinds of books, really cool. But that, I think that's important that they're sharing about what they're reading, right?
We like to do that. It's book talks. It's just another way, you know, you can let them talk about what they're reading either at home or in the classroom. You can talk about what you're reading. I was taught back when we did like everyone silent reading at the same time and that the teacher should be reading then to model it. And I don't think that's true anymore because it's kind of a waste of time. Like you could be out helping. And second of all, I can talk about what I'm reading at home. I don't have to read in front of them to model that I love reading.
I was just thinking of my older students and many of these same approaches that you're talking about that you're using in the classrooms, I use in many ways with older students as well. And so remember, Lindsay, you said at the beginning about sometimes for especially older readers who have struggled for many, many years, you're removing trauma. So we're not just thinking about, oh, a love of books or an enjoyment, enrichment. It's really, how can I remove the barriers and some of the really bad experiences you've had with books to make them even approachable for you? Because for a lot of students, they look at books and they break out in a cold sweat. You know, you say library and the stomach sinks. You know, you want to go to a bookstore and they say, I'll meet you in an hour. You tell me when you're done. These are the experiences that they've had with the written word, and particularly places where that's all there is. And so you're trying to remove as much of that as you possibly can. So not only are you teaching them the skills they never receive, so they can actually approach a text in a way they never have before, because they have the skills finally for the first time and the support. But then it's also finding a bunch of material that they will find interesting. So some of it may be above and we discuss it and we talk about why this text looks the way that it does. But often too, I search desperately to find text that somebody has worked with so that they can bring it to a level that the student can approach it, but it's still a subject that maybe the student would find very interesting, or it's a book I know the student was never able to read because they didn't have the skills. So say it was 12 Years a Slave. That might have been a very interesting book when they were in high school or college, but they never read it, couldn't touch it because they just didn't have the skills. And then I have a copy that's more approachable. I've got a copy and I'll say, what do you think? Do you want to look at this text? And they'll say, gosh, when I was in school, I really thought that looked interesting and the class seemed to be having good discussions about it. I was never able to read any of it. Yeah, I think I'd really like to talk about that if you think I could. Absolutely. And so it's also bringing in, going back, going through texts that you know they probably had in a classroom, but you know they didn't have the skills to read, and seeing if they want to approach that text. And I've seen students just light up that are older. I mean, these are students who are past going to college. It doesn't really matter at this point whether it's going to be for a class or not, but it's just because they know that other people have been able to read that and have an experience with it. I'd like that opportunity as well.
I love that, Donnell. It's so important. And that was one thing I wanted to ask, is to get more into that. How do we help them heal? How do we help them with this trauma? And I love the idea of kind of going back and helping them access those texts, right?
You know, and Lindsay, another important thing too, my students have taught me a lot of things. My students teach me a lot about reading, those who have struggled. And one thing that we have kind of devised and developed over time is we have a way of talking about reading where the student gets to tell me what they're experiencing with reading and what they need. And finding those words and finding the strength to be able to say that to somebody else, to say, hey, look, this text isn't working for me because, and then having the right words to say why it isn't working. But I'd like to learn this information. Is there another way we can do this? And the more we have those conversations, they'll come back to a tutoring session and tell me about an experience at work, an experience where they had to go down to a city building and they wanted them to read a document before they filled something out. I mean, it can be so many ways in which they encounter print. And they'll come back and talk about how those words were so powerful because they were able to use them when they were out and about to talk about, hey, this isn't working for me. Is there another way that we could do this so that I can participate in this? It's really interesting. That rights of the reader, right?
Yeah. Stacey, did you have something?
No, I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Okay. So is there anything you think that we might do that would hinder or, you know, destroy the love of reading?
Oh, yes, I can think of many. And you know, here's the thing. If any of this strikes close to home, remember, we've all done things we wish we hadn't have done, right? So just remember that whenever anything's being called out. But I think it's anytime a student picks up a book and they're struggling through that first page, whether they're making a lot of errors or they just have no interest, giving the student the right to say, let's choose something else, and not saying to them, nope, you have to. I mean, a really good reader perseveres, right? No, let's see if we can't find some other way of approaching. I think my door is much more wide open. And I thought I had a door that was wide open before, but my students have taught me my door could be much more open than it is and has been. And so I think that's one is allowing students to say, can I choose something else? Because there's so much, we can find something.
Well, and that's kind of mine too, that it's about that choice, because I talked about this in our pet peeves episode. I think it's in season one. So if you guys want to go back, that tells the whole story. But, you know, when we tell students, you have to read this level. And I think we need to open that up because, you know, maybe they want to read something easier. And I shared experience with that. And that's fine. That's their interest. Maybe they want to read something harder. You know, and they can do that with support, and maybe someone's going to be supporting them with that. Or maybe they have a lot of background knowledge on that topic, and so they'll be able to read that text a little better. So that's kind of my pet peeve and something that I think can hinder if we tell our students, nope, you can only read from these books. You know, the other thing I was thinking about is what hindered my, I still love to read, so it didn't totally hinder it. But I just remember in like high school or junior high, these extensive book logs that I had to do. And you had to like stop the reading to fill out this whole thing and a thought and all this. And I just hated that. I'm like, I just want to read the book.
You're not alone of the book logs. And the thing about it is you can really love reading and not love the book log. So imagine what it's like if reading is difficult and you've got to do the book log, right?
Yeah.
So just on so many levels, thinking about, is that really, and then what does that really telling me, and how is that really helping my student, right? To really think that through for a little bit.
You know, my son, he has dyslexia. He's in seventh grade, and we went to go, I had to go change his sheets the other day to wash him. And he helped me get everything out of his bed. And there was like a stack of like 20 books. We piled them up and took a picture because he just leaves them all in his bed. And I just thought, I love this. I love that he loves to read. And that's, you know, pretty unique for someone with severe dyslexia. But we have so many like positive experiences, me reading to him and then him reading to me. We always snuggle up on the couch and read. And I just love that. So I just think, you know, yes, we absolutely, our main focus should be teaching these students to read. And that's going to help lead to love of reading, but we can also do some other things to encourage the love of reading. And I think kind of our consensus that we've been talking about is having those positive moments, those meaningful experiences with text. So thank you guys so much for this conversation.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation. And in closing, I would just add not to blame the student too. I think sometimes we do that if their love of reading doesn't match ours, or really just facilitating that. And I'm thinking about things like that are good for us. There are some things that are good for me that I don't like. Like okra. Is okra even good for you? I guess it depends on how you make it. but it's good for you, right? Lots of vitamins. Just encouraging how reading can benefit our lives, I think, is helpful too. And then I really appreciated the question of what do we need to be careful of so we're not facilitating that love. And I think you guys had great responses to that. So what a fun episode. Thank you guys for the conversation. And thank you all for joining us. And we will see you next time on the next episode of Literacy Talks.
Thanks for listening to Literacy Talks, the podcast series for literacy leaders and champions everywhere. Literacy Talks comes to you and your colleagues from Reading Horizons, where reading momentum begins. Visit readinghorizons.com/literacytalks often for resources, ideas, and great literacy learning conversations. Subscribe to our podcast digest, and you'll always be up to date on all things literacy. See you next time.